Art School book on rivers. Now you have three books. The laws of rivers, you shall know. I give you one guarantee. After all three, forgive my voice.
No, we're not.
After we finish with all three books, we still won't know what's going on.
Nope.
The laws of rivers, you shall know. I give you one guarantee. After all three, forgive my voice.
No, we're not.
After we finish with all three books, we still won't know what's going on. That's the one guarantee that we have. And I spend much more time learning these things. I'm medium and very, very difficult. We'll begin. I wish we'll begin with the left over to Tetharisma. And then we'll branch back to other areas. Let's explain the basics. You may have to do your form that I left to rest on. Describe what Tetharisma is. Tetharisma, the word iska means that part of the money that I give to you is a loan. Of course, a non-interest bearing loan. One may not charge interest for a loan. The other half, however, is what we call a pikadon. Pikadon is opposed to halva. Halva is a loan, but pikadon is a deposit with a business investment. I can give you $1,000 to invest for me, okay? And if you invest it, profits accrue to me. So only one problem with that. What's that? If you lose it, the loss is mine. So now that I told you, let's say we're on a tightrope. We want to arrange a situation, a scenario, that I will be able to collect profits on an investment without any possibility of loss. Now, if you knew someone who had a trick to do this, you'd be a billionaire on Wall Street. How do you have a no-lose situation? You're guaranteed a profit, and you can't lose. That's unbelievable. Well, you have, I guess, interest-bearing, notes, but that we don't have interest, this is not allowed. How do you pull it off? Well, you really can't be completely assured, but the way they did it was as follows. The original Hetheriska, it was developed by later Gedolim throughout the last four or five centuries, goes as follows. The money, I give you $2,000, half is a loan and half is a deposit. So now the loan, I'm going to get back $1,000. That's for sure. I give you $1,000, I get back $1,000. No doubt about it. Not more, not less. Not a penny more, not a penny less. However, if the other path, not the wild card. So, if I would like taxes. I'll give you $2,000 for a year. When the year is up, I'd like out of my pocket $2,200. I went to a guy, gave it to Rivers, he'd give me 10%, right? I mean, is that unreasonable, 10%? I'm losing Cy Sims over here. So 10% is not crazy, right? Okay. So I want out at the end of the year, $2,200. I'd like to, it's a dream. But I want to, my friend Yid wants the money too, but I don't want to, why should I lose? So I give him $1,000 loan, I'm going to get back $1,000 loan. I give him $1,000 deposit. I want him to invest it for me in stocks, real estate deals, any business that he thinks is a good deal. And I say that I fully expect that with your size, six degree, and your talent, and your understanding of the market, I expect you to be able to realize a 20% profit on that $1,000. P.S. 20% of 1,000 is 200. So therefore, when the year is up, I fully expect to have 2,200 back. How? 1,000 for 1,000, without any interest. And 1,200 for 1,000, I expect you to be able to make a 20% profit, my money. Yeah.
So why dividing it 50-50? Why don't we just say, okay, the whole thing is together?
Very good question. There are some poskim who say nowadays we should do it that way. Others have various reservations. A very good question. We just won't go into it. Take it the whole hour. Okay? Now, problem. The year is up. I woke up and I said, so you just give me my $2,200 back. I said, all you're getting back from me is $1,000. What do you mean $1,000? Maybe $2,000. Yeah, you heard me right. $1,000. What? I expect $2,200. You give me back $1,000? You mean must be $2,000. So now I mean $1,000. What? Well, very simple. I invested in your behalf. I bought this great stock. And lo and behold, the stock went down from $10 a share to zero. The company went bankrupt. And now the stock is worth absolutely zero. What? You can't do this to me. You're ruining me. Now, there could also be sums which add to zeros at the end. It could be millions of dollars, not just... So, to try to make this scenario extremely unlikely, the had the risk of reasons follows. In order for the, if you have the text in front of you, the borrower and also the investor, one of the best things on behalf of his friend, was like this. Listen, if I will claim that I made less than $200 profit at the end of the year, I will have to substantiate that fact by bringing two kosher witnesses, who will say that I did not make any profit. That would be a simple way to do it. Well, the rabbis had thought better of it for various reasons and said as follows. Listen to the split. And that's what's written in your English edition. There are two problems. One, there could be no profits. Two, there could be a loss. So as far as the loss is concerned, we raise the threshold of proof that the borrower must bring two trustworthy witnesses to say that there was there was a loss. If he claims it was an actual loss, he must produce two witnesses. If he claims that there was no profit, giving back 2,000 instead of 2,200, for this we have to allow him to be believed with an oath, a shavua. These are technical reasons why it has to be this way. Why demanding two witnesses concerning the prophets would be too onerous a demand and would make rivers problems. That's what's written in the piece of paper, correct? What does it say there? That if you want to say that there was a loss, you have to bring two trustworthy witnesses. And if you want to say there was no profit, you have to take it over. Is that what it says?
Mm-hmm.
Most people will not be able to forgive me. Most people will not be able to produce two witnesses to say that there was a loss. I gotta find witnesses, I gotta prove it. Who said that that's the same money, maybe different money you invested, maybe this, maybe that. And most people don't want to take an oath at all. Who wants to swear? Swear, all the same. Torah, swear, God's name, whoa. We're all scared to do that. So in 99 out of 100 cases, the person who gave the money, gave the 2,000, will receive back the full 2,200 because the person whom he gave is not going to want to swear, can't bring two witnesses, and that's all. That's called a heter risk. So is there a theoretical chance of a loss on the part of the man with the original with the money? The answer, absolutely yes. You can lose all the money, half the money. You can lose how? If the debtor slash receiver will bring to witnesses that the money was lost in business. This happened recently in Eretz Yisrael. And they don't follow newspapers. Too busy reading about the politics. But the sideshow of all the politics in Israel is that there was a heterist in a big bank in Eretz Yisrael, and somebody borrowed money from the bank and was able to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the entire money that he borrowed from the bank, he put into a certain stock, and the stock was bust. And then he came to the bank for not paying it back. We saw he had the risk of it. The bank said, "You're crazy, you're giving us the money." So the Rabbanim said, "If you take that money, but you have the risk of it's no good, means we're going to say your whole bank is us to use." Back and forth with that, back and forth, this way, that way, and the other way. It also made the Wall Street Journal a couple years back. Same happened with America. Somebody borrowed money would have the risk of, and tried to refuse to pay it back on the ground, and he lost the money in business. He had witnesses, and there's a whole trouble. Millions of bucks on that, there is a trouble. They're two Jewish men. So it's not so simple. P.S. is a big question as follows. Very big question. What happens if the parties sign a piece of paper? On the bottom of the piece of paper it says, "I'll pay the risk." On top it looks just like a regular loan with interest, 10% per annum, 20%, whatever. But they write to the bottom, "I'll pay the risk." That this whole thing should be understood in the context of the risk. The question is this effective or not? Many poskim say that it's not effective. It's not like a hesher, like I had an OU. There's an OU on the piece of paper. OU? Kosher. It's a kosher business. Not an OU. You have to know what you're talking about. You have to understand what it is. And therefore, for example, quoting from one of the poskim of contemporary poskim. Let's say the creditor asks the debtor to sign this piece of paper and say at the bottom how he had the risk. So the debtor asks the creditor, "What does that mean?" So the creditor tells the debtor, "Don't worry about it. Just finish. Just file off me. Don't worry about it. Just sign it." And it's no good. But obviously here, the debtor doesn't know what it's about. The creditor doesn't want to tell him what it's about. Why? For an obvious reason. Why do you want to tell him what it's about? No? He can lose. Come back to the land and say, "I lost the money." He's trying to hide it from him. So if the creditor is trying to hide the facts from the debtor, so then this tether risk is his wrong potato. It's nothing. That's a big problem. The tether risks are written, no one knows what in the world it's all about. Creditor, the debtor, no one knows what's going on. It's a big problem. A big problem. Others disagree and say, "Well, maybe it's effective anyway." There's also another major issue which came up 70 years ago. They saw how many people were lending with ribbis, unfortunately. They decided to make what they called a heter iska kloli. What heter iska kloli means? That there should be not a heter iska on each and every deal. I deal with you, Ruben deals with Shimon, they deal with Yehuda, Sar deals with Ruffel, Leah deals with Kana. No, that's a one-on-one heter iska. A general heter iska. A heter iska kloli. How do you do a heter iska kloli? How do you do that? Let's say people will say, "Listen, all my business that I do should be considered to be in the category of heter iska. Everything I do." That's a big sign. That's the deal. And I'll sign a separate piece of paper for each and every business dealing. I just write a big sign up on the wall that everything should be considered according to heter iska. Also be it that some rely on what they call a heter iska kloli. Of course, write a big sign on the wall. Everything should be up to heter iska. And according to some, say it works. Others say, no. to do hefriska for each and every loan. So what do we do these days? We try to do both. Put a big sign on the wall, hefriska. But in each and every document that is written, it should say on the bottom, even in small letters, al pi hefriska. I don't know, you can write down Hamofia Bachanut, as you call it. In other words, the corner of the headdress which is hanging on my wall. So that's something which should be done. Same with banks. Every bank in Israel has a hefriska, I know, but they all have. And sometimes they don't put not every single bill or check says al pi hefriska. There's a little bit more leniency because the bank has certain rules and regulations. Once the owners of the bank, managers, sign it, they can't change their mind every second. It's not like a storekeeper. I sell you books. Today I'll charge ribbons, tomorrow I won't charge ribbons, and I'm going to stop me. I'm just a private mom and pop store. But a big bank, which has all these legalities, you can't change that. So it works. Even if the person doesn't know exactly where it's hanging, it's in an office somewhere, or in a safe somewhere, it's considered to be done up according to the hefriska. That's what many posts can assume. Better to write done up the hefriska even there. It's better, of course it's better. But it's not an absolute obligation. Pay careful attention to the heter, this which I gave you. That's a basic piece of paper. There's many, many more fancier ones with details, etc., etc. We're not going to go into the full details now. Few other examples of banking or bank-like situations which relate to this. Whenever you borrow money, you pay back according to the consumer price index. Very popular in Eretz Yisrael, especially not so much now, but the old years of inflation was crazy in Israel. Who's old enough to remember those days? Inflation, 100% inflation, it's crazy. I think that stopped, 10 years ago, when did that stop? No? Still going on? No. Not as crazy as it used to be. A time that's wild. Triple digit inflation, it's crazy. Triple digit inflation, so people wouldn't want to lend money for anything. They have to have, okay, I'm not asking for any ribbons. I'm lending you 100 shkolim or liros. They have no dias. Shkolim. I want you to give me back 100 shkolim, that's all. But tzavud la index, they call it that as well. What's tzavud? What does tzavud mean? Tzavud, no?
Stuck.
Stuck? Close to, tied to, right? Tzavud. Tzamid pasilala, we have a chumash. That's tied to, connected to. So it's a mina index. So the index doubles. So you have to pay back 200 shkolim. And then a year later, that's not allowed. And I told you last week, according to halacha, even the price of every single item goes up. It's obvious that nothing changed. Except that the shekel is worth half the price. It doesn't matter. According to halacha, the shekel remains the same, and the prices are all changing. Even though economists will tell you it's crazy, that's the way it is. Same with Samud Ladala, not a problem in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't want it, they wanted the Dal, they wanted to have the Dal in today. They wanted to have the Dal, Samud Ladala. Again, you can't do that for Pashtus. You have to have the risk for that also. Interesting question. Are you permitted to lend out Dal in Eretz Yisrael? That's a major question. What's the Shiloh? Somebody pointed out last week, you may not lend out objects. You lend out an object, the price can fluctuate. This is a dollar. The dollar used to be worth 3 shkolim, now the dollar is worth 4 shkolim. Of course, the inflation rates, but most posts can maintain you may not lend out dollars in Eretz Yisrael. The dollar is simply a commodity. The only officially recognized currency is the shekel. Other posts can disagree and say, no, a dollar is so readily accepted in Israel that we give it a status of cash. Everyone takes dollars. It's true, everyone takes dollars. But so what? Great question. Let me ask you, have a lot of collective experience here among the people in this class. Were you ever in Eretz Yisrael and you offered to pay dollars and were turned down?
Yes. Where? It's not a lot of money. Unless it's like $200.
You were turned down to pay dollars?
You can pay like $1 for something. No, definitely. It's
turned down?
Yeah.
Really?
In small stores.
Yeah.
Yes. Like major stores.
Okay. That indicates. If you turn down to paying dollar, that proves that the Machmir are right. The dollar is not legal tender.
But
and it's not even a factual tender. People don't want to take it.
But the loaning you do of dollars a lot of times is between two Americans, in which case like you'll definitely take dollars
to work with your money. Still not allowed. If you're in Israel, you can't let out dollar for dollar. The dollar in Israel is a commodity. So even though you can do the exact same thing in America, you can't do it in Israel. It's strange, no? So go make a loan from your American bank. So you take my American bank a dollar, your bank a dollar in America. That's what you have to do. Can't help it. Can't help credit cards in the English edition. Credit card. Credit card. Oh, here we go. Credit cards. Here we go. Big problem. But see, they're talking about two different things. In this book, the Torah statement, he said, you're allowed to borrow the credit card? You're allowed to borrow the credit card? Are you allowed to pay more money with the credit card? That depends on the old story. Japan, Visa, who's on Visa? Chase, Chemical, they're all the same now. Probably some multi-conglomerate, multi-goyim. If you assume that the majority of goyim is goyim, which with many posts can assume, you have no problem. If you don't assume that way, you have a serious problem. If you pay on time, you have no problem. Pay on time. Pay on time, that's all. A credit card is necessary, they won't take a check. You want to go buy an airplane ticket or something like that. Give them a check. They'll laugh you out. They're crazy. Give me a credit card. Last thing's accepted anyway. Checks are not. Good reason. Check a bounce. That they can't bounce. Not bounceable. So people take a credit card because you have no other way to buy things. Everybody should have a credit card. If you don't have a credit card, you can't move. You get stuck somewhere, you don't have cash, don't make a check. You're out of luck. Anyone in this room that does not have a credit card? Kolakavod. I'm very proud. I used to say that one of my children had no credit card, no license, no telephone. What else? Something that not true anymore. That they all have licenses and telephone and credit card. I mean, that different things. No check account. That's what it was. But these things gradually change. But the truth is, a credit card is more important than a check account nowadays. Because it gets you whatever you want. But just pay on time, that's all. If you pay on time, it's the greatest deal. you pay late, they have the last laugh. They charge 20% or some of that ridiculous sum of money. The same reason in my house, I try very hard to avoid the overdraft. You know what overdraft is? You have a checking account. It used to be when it went to zero, and you have a check with bounce. Now they give you overdraft, and we like you so much. We love you. Up to $5,000 beyond zero, we'll give you. We'll also charge a 25% interest, whatever the state allows. But it's very good. Don't bounce a check. It's embarrassing to bounce a check. You're also paying interest. So like my wife is, who runs the bank, says, I told her, don't try very hard to avoid overdraft. But that means you're taking, you're paying interest to Chase Manhattan Bank. I don't want to pay them interest because they have Jewish owners. All right, you're admitting it to be Mekel. You're lenient if you have to. If you don't have to, you don't have to. If you have to, you have to. That's how I view this matter. Yeah.
Back to what we were saying before with the dollar in Israel. So would it be a problem then, is there a problem really with like with paying for Israeli bonds in terms of
Israeli bonds have a heteroism.
Oh, they do.
Yes, they do. Israeli government runs a heteroism. It's a holy government. I'm not saying about the peace process, nothing. The government is a heteroism. I'm not going into politics. Now, it's a very common case. Yes.
Under the
constitution, oh, you. Pintula Beis Yaakov of never on the credit card. Rivers. Never on the credit card. Have you ever wanted to pay for an airplane ticket on the sun? Splash? Cash. Cash and flash. I got LA. LA, the hot city. I can't always get cash. So what if you want to get an airplane ticket? What are you going to do? Thank you, guys. There's a much bigger problem on the credit card. Look at the problem is. People don't have credit cards, but don't have credit lines. So what do? They go to a friend. Do me a favor. Let me use your credit card. So that's what he talks about. Borrowing a credit card and paying interest fees for the owner. What would you say? Before I even look, what would you say? You guessed it right. It's ribbis. People say, what kind of ribbis? People fight with me in shul about this thing. Fight with me. They say, that's ridiculous, Rabbi. You're crazy. They don't say that. They say it doesn't make any sense. I borrow your credit card. And I go buy an item that costs $100. I don't pay on time, so it ends up costing $102. So now, the bill comes from Visa for $102. So I write a check to Visa of $102. What's wrong? I'm paying a guy. Not allowed. Even if I write my check directly to Visa. I'm paying Visa on whose behalf? They don't know me. They never heard of me. They heard of you. You are responsible to Visa. So I'm paying interest for you. You know it's going to a guy? It's not allowed. Let's proceed. If it's true. Let's see what he said in the book. 1715. Let's read it. 1715. Excuse me. A fairly common practice for someone who is short of cash to borrow a credit card from a friend or relative and make purchases with it. When this happens, the person using the card must pay the card owner only the amount of money he actually used for the purchases. He may not pay the finance charges which accumulated as a result of his purchase. This prohibition applies even if he pays the bank directly. My Balabatim can't understand this. They don't understand this. They just don't understand this.
Can you explain it again?
So if you borrow a credit card, what do? Pay on time. You have 30 days. Pay on time. Just a question over here. What if he promises to pay on time and doesn't? Promised to pay on time, and he doesn't. So some poskim say, well, it's his fault, he caused me damage. He caused damage, he's paid for the damage. So maybe if you give me a gift, you don't pay on time, you can pay me later, then maybe if it's a certain delay, you gotta get out of it. Page 312 in the article of this book. But I'm telling you, if you borrow a credit card, pay on time. Otherwise, it's immoral and causes a lot of problems. Yes? Very simple. You borrow, you using your own card, there's only two people involved. You and Mr. Chase, we'll assume it's a guard for the moment. Mr. Chase is a guard. But if You borrow your friend's car. No, your friend borrows your car. She doesn't have a car. She'll borrow your car, right? Now, you are now owing $102 to Mr. Chase for a $100 purchase, right? As far as Chase knows, you bought it. They don't know you gave it to a friend. They don't care. They don't know about your friend. Who's on the line? Who has to pay for this as far as Chase is concerned? And what is the name of your other car? So you borrowed $100 from Chase and give back $102 to Chase. For you to do it is fine. Why? You borrow from Chase and give back to because Chase is a guy with some.
No, but I don't understand what you're saying.
Ah, but your friend pays. What the friend is really doing is getting you a hook. But they're paying Ribbis for you.
You're the one paying Ribbis, or someone else
is
paying for you. Either way,
it's only you and Mr. Chase. It's only you and the guard. There's no possibility that Ribbis is between two Jews. But if it's you and your friend, it's Ribbis between two Jews. You and your friend.
But he's not paying you.
Doesn't make a difference.
No, he borrowed from you. He borrowed from you, not from Chase.
I now remember now. I'm just thinking now. What about him? Last spring in Riverdale, there were a series of three shiurim on Ribbis. They are very distinguished for Rabbi Muncy, well, the book on Ribbis. The first shiur, I wasn't there. The first shiur was on this. Opening law was this case. And after he started saying it, so they started yelling at him, you know, $1 bus that opened his mouth, this is ridiculous. And after she was over, he started arguing with him when the Rosh Hashiva said, this is crazy, and this thing came to me. What a rabbi, what do you think about this case? Absolute Ribbis. Waves his hand, can't be. It's a din of Furish and Shulchan Aruch. Din of Furish, you want to look it up? I'll tell you where to find it. Yoredeya 168:17. Okay? 168:17. Your case. Look at this. A Jew told his friend, borrow me money from a guy. Okay? If the person who took the money is responsible, he is responsible, it's prohibited for the person who got the money at the end to pay ribbis to the guy. Is it a push? Simon Kuf Samaches, if you die. Where do you get it from? A rush, or this, or that. I'm going to catch you in the shoulder. I said, I can't help it. It's not my fault.
What happens if the money is if it doesn't
end up
that you
do pay on time?
No, you don't. Then what?
Then what happens is your friends give you back $100. You got to keep the $2. Your $2 loss. Pilpul and Puskin, if your friend promised to pay on time and didn't, can she then buy you a $2 gift a month later? Make up for it. That's a discussion. They could cause you damage. That's a discussion. Credit cards are dangerous. I guess you're right. But if you never borrow one, you're in worse shape. Better use your own. Okay. Now, what if you have a higher price for credit than for cash? You go to a gas station, right? So our gas stations, we assume, are goyim. But what if they wouldn't be? Here he has chapter 6, paragraph 5. A business may not set two prices for the same item, one for cash and one for credit. Because you're paying the credit, you're paying the ribbis. So you must buy cash. You must buy cash.
So
if the gas station is a Jewish gas station, you may not use a credit card because it's charging you more money, correct? Correct. And it applies to Israeli station, you gotta pay cash. Sorry.
Can you explain why it's
for this? Because you're paying more for a credit. What does that mean, you're paying more for credit? But what do you mean you're paying more for credit? Why?
Because
you're not giving the cash today, which is what's today? December what? December 19th. And it's not going to be due the credit cycle for another 2 weeks. All right, how these things go. 2 weeks. So in effect, what's happening is the gas station is lending you money for 2 weeks till you have to pay. And as a result, they're giving you back more. The gas only costs $10. But for credit, it costs $11.
But you're not buying from the gas station.
What?
You're not buying from the gas station. This is your account. This is your credit card account. This is your money that you have in the account. If you go over, you're dealing with the credit card company. It's the credit card company that pays the gas station.
No.
Okay.
You give a gas station, you're paying the gas station. If you give a $10 bill, he'll keep it in his pocket. So when you're giving a piece of plastic, what's happening? Goes to the Sunoco, Shell, Exxon, I don't know, these conglomerates, and it goes back to this guy ultimately. Obviously, it's what happens. Anyway, it's a problem.
Usually they charge more for using credit card because they have to pay more.
Oh, so if it's just a matter of what we call, he asked about that too in this book. You have to passing on processing costs, right? That would be okay. Unfortunately, the markup for credit purchases often exceeds the added cost to the company. This is prohibitive. That's the problem. Yeah, just getting a pass along of an extra little service fee. I wonder if that's what we discussed last week by paying installment. Let's look up credit. Is that the way to pay? Is that what it's called? You pay, like for insurance, it's a perfect example. You want to pay once a year, insurance will charge you X dollars. You pay twice a year, they charge you more. Oh, insurance companies, service charges, $6.30.
So is that okay then?
1 second, I haven't looked it up yet. Let's see what it says. $37. Insurance companies add a service charge when payment is made in installments. This is permitted as long as it is called a service charge and not a credit fee or interest.
So any service charges are all right?
It has to be normal. Service charge is 1,000%. It's not a service charge. Okay? Now, I don't know if I rely on this for a Jewish company, but if I may have Allstate or something like that. So since the Bris Yehuda quotes is not even for a Jewish insurance company, we can certainly be making for a Goyesha. Insurance company. It's called a service charge, not called reviews. Anybody with me? These are very important examples. There's nothing in this world that's guaranteed to be mutter. That's why the principal of Macy Yaakov has only cash. No. Tell me, just print all the house?
Yeah.
Doesn't own the house, because otherwise the guy had a mortgage and moved to Bell's Rivers. So he rented the apartment. Who was this print? What's his name? Rabbi?
Burstein.
He's a great man. Must be a great man. Wow. Must come to the house, he's afraid about the rivers. The problem.
For what?
Because the mortgage. Mortgage is rivers. Yeah? No, I said that he's not there a service charge even for a Jewish company. Second, so if you're an American, you're paying to a Jewish company.
Why
the house? I told you before. A Goyish company, it would be completely Goyish, be no problem. Some Jews are involved, you try to avoid it. All right. What about paying? I mentioned to you, I think, before, this next week, is there Rimis from a company, a Moshe's bank, I told you, and other folks from the market. Limited liability. We discussed it last week? Am I in dreamland? I didn't mention this last week.
Yeah,
because I'm dreaming. Mm-hmm. You're dreaming or both. We didn't mention about a limited liability. But Moshe claims there's no personal liability, so there cannot be any rivers.
Yeah.
And other folks say it's wrong.
Yeah.
How about discounting a check? I have a check which has in it. The check was all paid and given to me. Post-date the check. Given to me. $1,000 due January 1st. You know, for tax purposes, like that difference of next year, 96. Great. I can't wait that long. Shoot, I'm going to Eretz Yisrael on December 30th. I can't wait until January 1st. I need the money. But how can I do it? Only to pay it January 1st. I go to my friend and say, listen, Mr. Friend, this check is worth $1,000 January 1st. The person who signed the check is probably good for the money. give me money now. What will you buy it for? I'll buy it, I trust it, I'll buy it for $900. Okay, $900 today, on December 19th. And he'll collect this $1,000 from the bank by putting the check in on January 1st. Is that mutter or asur? I would have put it on the too, but it's mutter. It's mutter. The reason is, there's no loan over here. It's a sale. It's a sale. But that's what this check is worth today. $900. That's what it's worth. And it's post-dated, it's worth $900. So it's a straight sale. Not considered to be in the category of whatsoever. Yes? Check balances, right? So what's the shadow? Presumably you're allowed to charge him to serve the shadow. That's nothing to do with anything. That's not rivers at all. He caused you a little loss. So here's the trick. We could arrange rivers in a de facto rivers by selling documents. Selling checks. Listen to this one. But you have to prop is, it only works when people trust each other. Here's the case. Look at it, it's a beautiful case. Reuven wants to borrow from Shimon. And he won't pay interest, but this is illegal. So Reuven goes to Levi. That's the problem. Levi has to get a little bit of this. Poor little Levi. Get victimized easily. Reuven goes to Levi and says, do me a favor, Levi. Do me a favor. Write me a $120 check. December 19th, 1996. Right? So far so good? Now what does Reuven do? Goes to Shimon, sells his stock, his check to Shimon for how much now? For $100. What happens? Reuven got $100 from Shimon. Correct? Shimon will collect $120 December 19th, 96. Levi, who paid $120 to Shimon, in effect, will collect $120 from Reuven. In effect. So this is a trick. The trick.
Wait, can you repeat that?
Sure. Fish put on the board? The triangle of it. Oh, come on. What are you talking about? What are you doing? Well, languages, anyway.
Bye, like this.
Bye.
I guess two.
Holly, five, four. Yeah. Reuven. Shimon. And Levi. Okay? So now Reuven wants to borrow $100 from Shimon and give it back $120. But you can't say no though. That's Rivers. So how do you arrange it? Listen carefully. Reuven goes to Levi and asks him, Lady, write me a check. $120 check through 96. There it writes a $120 check to Reuven. Reuven. What to do? December 96. That's the first act. A check. Right? Lady knows. What does that mean? Let me give him a check.
Hello.
Let me give him a check. That Reuven had to, you get with this money, with this piece of paper, we'll be able to have $120. Now one second. Then Reuven will sell this check to Shimon. Step one. Step two. Reuven. Mocher, a check. Shimon. When? December 95, price?
$100.
$100. Step two. So far legit, right? Mm-hmm. Legit, correct? You said you could sell a check for cheaper. Okay? So what happens now? Reuven got from Shimon what? $100. Shimonaz and check of Levi will collect in 96. What's going to happen? They'll collect 120. Right? So in step three, one second. Step three, what's going to happen? Levi wrote the check, right? So Levi gives Shimon $120 when? In 96. Correct? Now, whoa, well, I'm on to Levi. Levi gets a check. Right, Levi wrote the check originally. What else happens in 96, 796? Reuven gives Levi $120. Also 96. Right, Reuven gives Levi $120 in the 796.
Well, I think just asked Levi in the first place for the $120 and then saved him some cash. I think I missed this step.
Reuven asked Levi for $120, right? When in December of 96, cash.
He just asked for $120 loan. Levi's not making out any better anyway.
Levi makes nothing
on
in this deal.
Right, just borrow from Reuven. Forget about Shimon to begin with. Just borrow from Levi, rather. Forget about Shimon. Why do you need the middleman?
Okay.
Okay. I understand the process.
Work.
I understand why it's
necessary. You'll never find a Levi to agree with to do this. Levi has to be, he doesn't lose if he hasn't paid up. But again, I think he can only lose. I guess maybe when they pay the family, it'll work. Close friends, it'll work.
$120.
All right. It doesn't always work. The Levi has to be agreeable. have experienced piflut. Piflut is, it doesn't even exist anymore nowadays. It used to be, when I was in Eretz Yisrael, long time ago, there was a set relationship between the shekel, the lira then, and the dollar. It was fixed by government law. It was always a black market, it's still a black market, but it was a fixed relationship. have experienced pichut. Pichut is, it doesn't even exist anymore nowadays. It used to be, when I was in Eretz Yisrael, long time ago, there was a set relationship between the shekel, the lira then, and the dollar. It was fixed by government law. It was always a black market, it's still a black market. It was a fixed relationship. It wasn't floating, I think today things float a little bit, but then it was fixed. For example, it used to be in the old days, 3 liras to a dollar. And one fine day the government gave a clap and tish. 4 liras to a dollar. Okay. I borrowed from you. 300 liras. And it was worth that $100. And that had a pichut. So that to get the same market value with the dollars. So 100, what do you need? 400 liras. Can I pay you back 400 liras? So the answer is no. Even though it's, I pay back the exact same thing, because they're both worth $100. Doesn't matter. You lend $100 in Eretz Yisrael, and to make a calculation, that right now $100 is worth, what is it, what is these days? Three?
Yeah.
Now it's worth 300 shkolim. And I promise to pay you back 300 shkolim, no matter what the dollars do. That's okay. Even though I get the money in dollars and pay you back in shkolim, as long as you make a fixed equivalency right now, the dollar is worth 3 shkolim, I promise to pay back 3 shkolim, that's worth it.
Otherwise,
if
you pay the price of what you bought it?
It gets complicated. I'm paying you back in America, I'm paying you back here, I'm paying you back there. What happens if a person has an American check? An American check. Here's a common case. It's a very common case. I have a $100 check. I give it to my son as an Eretz Yisrael, and he needs it for his shkolim. He'll go to somebody or other, whoever he'll go to, and they'll give him for a $100 check. They'll give him what? 200 and something. I don't know what they'll give him. Shkolim. Is that legit? I think it's okay. You have to, in fact, you're selling the check.
It has nothing to do with
loaning. Whoa, 1 second. So the question is going to become, what will happen if the check bounces? So here's a big dispute in Poskim. Can the seller of the check accept that responsibility? Some say yes, and some say no. So it's a whole discussion about the recent posting. Okay, it's complicated. The vinegar to be maple. You can do this all the time. But not everyone agrees. Man, this is a complicated area. It's so complicated. Woo! We discussed that the inflation doesn't make a difference. It can't be disregarded in the health service. Pichut, we spoke about it before. It doesn't happen these days. Borrowing tzavut the dollar. Some say it's okay, but most say it's not okay. You said before. But there is a risk. sell something for dollars in Eretz Yisrael? The answer is yes. That all the time. You buy houses for dollars, don't buy the shkolim. Am I right? Maybe I'm wrong. We're all talking about dollars. The question, you have the rent, which is going to go up some of the dollar or not. Can you pay salaries some of the dollars? If you can issue a lot of different shilas, oh, it's so complicated. Very complicated. This is the Torah's Rivas, very much. But we haven't even begun to discuss the English book yet. We only have very little time to go. And this book is 400 something pages. What I'm going to just do is look through the index a little bit to try to give you some highlights. I'm just trying to give you a little bit of a taste of what's about. Yes. He talked about it, he mentioned this last week also, about advance payment. Paying less money to go to camp than you pay the money in September. I had to shout out someone else to shout out that, I think it's a big problem. I think he also doesn't like it. I saw someone earlier. It was probably rivers. It was just a deposit, you know, a small amount of money to make sure he's protecting his place in the camp. You know, he shouldn't just be frivolous. That's okay. But discounts would require prepayment. There's all kinds of things. Remember we had the Cartesian last time? We talked about that too.
Is the problem to pay the advance
payment? Early registration for hotels, schools, and day camps. Early bird specials. If it's just a deposit, okay. It's a substantial portion of the fee, then it should be avoided. How do you judge what's substantial, what's not? That obviously requires the judgment call. Rabbi Yashiv is moderate. You're not prepaying for merchandise, it's just prepaying for workers, in effect, like wages. For wages, it's okay. There are those who are making. What about the Cartesia? We got to explain before, it's for this more efficient manner of running the business, not because of the advance payment, it makes the business go faster. Talks about pre-publication prices is a problem, magazine subscriptions is a problem. Next chapter, newspaper subscriptions. Let's take a look. What does he say? Subscription. Here we go. Subscription. Newspapers, common to long-term subscription reduced rates. The problem. So some say the problem. Gives you a whole bunch of people who talk about it.
Shouldn't you have to subscribe rather than not be allowed to subscribe?
No, on the contrary, if you subscribe, you're paying less money, you're lending the money to the publisher and giving you back more. In other words, he said that follows. If the publisher wants cash in advance, it's not allowed. But if he just wants to keep his other costs down, then it is okay. He shouldn't say explicitly that pay in advance to save 20%. That's a big problem. All these magazines that we have. I'm talking about the true ones. The Jewish Press, the Jewish Observer, the Jewish... I'm not sure Jewish Action is the same thing. I don't know. But all the from the newspaper magazines go that go this way. How do you do that? Wow. Yes?
I'm not understanding this whole idea. Because if okay, take the example, let's say, of the magazine or camp or anything, right? So if everyone were to subscribe early, let's say subscribe by mail, not pay the newsstand price, then they would be losing money on it. So it would make sense that the newsstand price is inflated and that this is the regular price. And if so, then where the ribbons come in. Same thing with the camp. I mean, if everyone decides to get the early bird special, then the camp's losing money on taking the kids. So then it wouldn't make sense that they would do that. Why would they offer such a thing? It makes sense they gain more than
they don't. If they offer two prices explicitly, it's a problem. That's the problem.
So I don't understand why the early one would be the ribbons and not the later one, the ribbons.
Because presumably the later one is the official cost. So that's the official cost. Here's another instead of a question, but people don't realize this. A person, I have $100 in my bank. I'm getting, what does the bank pay now? $5%. Who can save that? 5% of any pay. My bank account. That's not even. 3%. 3%. Never. Doesn't pay anything to deal with. But let's say 3%. And you borrow the money. I'd be happy to lend you the money, but give you the 3%. I mean, I'm losing it. Not allowed. People don't realize it. It's a serious prohibition. People think, well, he's not giving me a profit, just making up for my loss. No, it's not allowed. Real ribbons. Israeli government bonds. I'm just going alphabetically, just give you some highlights. Israeli government bonds. What does it say here? Had the risk. Okay, had the risk. Actually, the government hasn't had the risk. Had the risk according to the permanent purchase of its bonds. Okay? We mentioned before, Moshe doesn't care about it because he thinks that the Israeli government is not a person. There's no personal liability to be all right. But other disagrees, as we mentioned. Oh my gosh. Once a post said maybe a government can't use Antirisco. Because it's the possibility that profits will be generated by the investments. But the government is not allowed to generate profits. How does it work? Well, the minigas can be made. But the government can't on Anders. Wow. Nothing is simple in this world. Okay. Yeah, this is another punchline also, another way. If you borrow a car, can you fill the gas tank? You feel grateful to the guy who lent you the car. Can you fill it? What do you say? What's your first reaction?
Yeah. You use the gas, you can just...
No, you use so much gas. You bought a car for you use the quarter of
the
time.
Yeah, it's a gift. Not interest.
Yeah, but you said you can't give this sometimes.
The answer is very simple. The word borrowing means two things in English, but they mean two completely different things in Hebrew. Borrowing could either be a loan, or borrowing could be... Again, loan also means two things. Borrowing could either be what we call halva'a or pikado. In other words, I'm lending you something and you can go spend it, use it, and give me back a different one, different greenbacks. Or what we call pikado. I'm giving you something to watch for me. Use it while you watch it. So that's the only time there's ever going to be a problem with ribbons, that you borrow in the sense of something you can spend. I'm not giving you the car to trade it and give me another car. I give you this car, give me back this car. That's not considered to be a halva at all. Therefore, it's okay to fill up the tank with gas. So see, not everything is awesome. Baruch Hashem. Okay. Okay. Canadian dollars. Anyone from Canada here? Nobody. Forget about it. Okay. You already pointed out last week that if I have money in a CD and I break it and I suffer a penalty and I break it just in order to lend you the money, you can reimburse me for the loss. Because it's simply a loss that I suffered in order to be able to lend the money to you. An interesting question. If you here's a serious question. It happened our famous in Torah I talked about last week. It was partly related. If you buy and sell, if you lend out a check and pay back a check, what's the halachic status? In other words, ribis min haTorah, that I give you a $100 bill and give me back.
Can you charge women that check?
I didn't say you can. You certainly may not. The question, if you do, is it ribis min haTorah or is it ribis min haRabbanan? And there could be differences. I repeat. Is it ribis min haTorah or ribis min haRabbanan? We discussed here last week the difference between some of them, between ribis min haTorah and ribis min haRabbanan. What's the status of the check? An analysis of the legal status of checks. Pages and pages. What is a check? Yes?
Someone
wants
to
give
you more than
money
and you should
be
the interest on your account,
you're paying you the penalty. You suffer a penalty for taking the CD out earlier. That's it. It's a one-time expense for the penalty. I give you any interest. Yes?
When somebody borrows a car, isn't he using up gas and then...
Ah, very good question. Great question. He asked that question. If I borrow a car, so I use a quarter of a tank and pay it back a half a tank. That's the ribbis. It's not gas for car, it's gas for gas. That's your question. The answer is obvious. That I'm not giving you an extra $5 of gas as a token of gratitude for you giving me $5 of gas. No, I'm giving you a car, which is worth $10,000, you're entrusting it to me. That's not giving you $5 of gas. He writes in his book that checks in the United States of America are different than checks in other countries such as Israel. And then the whole discussion about discounting a check should not work in America. Wow. In other words, you're allowed to sell a promissory note at a discount, right? And they post them extended checks. He says it should not be extended to checks that are drawn on U.S. banks. In the United States, when a person sells a $100 check for $90, he is not transferring debt. He's actually borrowing $90 with the check used as a means of payment. Wow. well, you won't be able to figure out even the fifth time.
You can't.
Well, I'll explain to that this trick says it won't work in the United States. He considers checks in the U.S. to be different than checks in other countries. I've heard this from other rabbanim as well. It's relevant because I'll tell you why. If he's right, I'll tell you what comes up. There are certain leniencies which apply to non-cash ribbis. Ribbis, like if I give you 100, you back 110 cash, that's the ribbis min haTorah. If you're playing with promissory notes, it knocks it down to a status of ribbis min haRabbanan, rabbinical ribbis. Rabbinical ribbis is permissible to charitable funds. If you're not dealing with your own private money, you deal with charity money. But there are those who maintain the thing, why you? Assuming that why is a charity. Now with the 22 mil, but if that's a wire school charity, so there would be no problem paying YU money, taking from YU money for all checks. Some folks can say that. Others say no, checks are not in America what they are in Israel. It's a different kind of legality.
It's whether or not they're considered promissory notes?
Right. Instead of a check in America, it's not considered a promissory note. Who's in Cy Simpson? If you have to read this, you have a chance. It's a 5-page essay, page 229 to 233. I can't summarize in a minute. It's other I want to say the same thing. Checks in America are different than Israel. So that's it's the small print in the law. Yes.
What is the fact that we don't have a charity?
Because the rabbis were more lenient when it comes to charitable funds, the funds for orphanages, things of this nature. They say if it's Torah prohibition, you can't allow it. The rabbinical prohibition, they never extended it to what you might call public funds. Okay? So some maintain that a check is a that a check is simply a promissory note. He writes, no, it's not true. Not, it's in America, it's simply not true according to the legalities. So scratch that one. Even the Israeli law is a problem, he calls. There's a big tumult. Okay, let's continue. That's penalty payments for the last time. Not so simple. Not so simple. In certain cases, it may be permissible to charge a penalty payment. Yes. And we said that prepayment is a problem. Prepayment for early camp registration may be a problem. For magazine subscription may be a problem. Things of this nature. What about rental fees? Rental fees. Here he says, normally rent is due at the end of the rental period. That's the way, that's how it is halakhically. So if that's the case, you're allowed to pay, I mentioned this last time also, you can pay less earlier. $100 per month for rental. You pay at the end of the month, which is the normal way in halakha when you pay a rent. Charging. But 95, you pay it at the beginning of the month. That's okay. Prepayment is mutter because you see, how should I, we have to go through a little analysis. Prepayment is usur when the normal time to pay is at the beginning. So then what you're saying is, you want to pay now, which is the normal time, you pay X. You want to pay later, so you're paying more. So that's going to be a problem for us either way. But if the normal time is to pay later, you want to pay earlier and get a discount, that's okay. And you're paying earlier than the normal time. It's a big question, what's called the normal time? We assume that normally when you buy something, you pay immediately. And normally when you rent something, you pay at the end.
And why don't we apply this to early bird specials?
Early bird specials?
Yeah.
Early bird specials. Won't be the normal way to pay?
If we say then, that if we say that the normal way to pay is full price at the end, so you're paying earlier, you're paying at the beginning, earlier in time, so you pay less.
No. Earlier time is to pay, the regular time is to pay before the summer, not after the summer. Summer is when the service is being provided. That's the difference.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Who's in business here? Something called 210 net 30? What does that mean? In the U.S., the common business practice to bill customers under the terms known as 2 over 10 net 30. That means they can deduct 2% of their bill and they pay within 10 days.
Yeah.
Otherwise, full payment and then 30 days.
If
I pay in this, 210 net 30. It's a two-tier pricing system, and therefore it is prohibited. Parents would tell all the time in America. You have to have their risk. It's a two-tier system. Sorry. Not easy being in business. Okay. What happens if the Heteriska goes against some law of the land? We started discussing that a little bit before. What happens then? He writes as follows. And you have to write Heteriska like this. In the event of any conflict between the terms of this ISK agreement and the terms of any other agreement some of the two parties will enter the above mentioned funds, the terms of this agreement, the Heteriska, shall prevail. What much you write. Otherwise you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. You have to say the Heteriska will prevail over any other agreement that you may have signed. Before the question whether a dollar is considered local currency.
Because it was much later.
It'll be much easier. I will do it for you in English. Because I was already told if I'm not here, last year I did it in Hebrew, it was the whole day we were going crazy. The clock was going to sugar. Up and down the aisle, what does this word mean? A lot of purists, that actually mean Hebrew, that's why I'm here. But I'm not here, so I have to write it in English. Okay? So, maybe we'll just stop here and give you a little bit of a break. If any question I want to ask you now about this or anything else, I'm here.